Chapter 4, Heir of the World. And Abram believed the Lord, and the Lord counted him as righteous because of his faith. Genesis 15, verse 6, New Living Translation. In tracing the life of Abraham, we've arrived at Genesis 15, and the fourth time God contacted him. Previously, God had stated that he would become a great nation and receive Canaan as the land of promise. Chapter 12, verses 1 through 7, and 13, 14 through 17. This new encounter reconfirmed the promise of an heir and descendants. In the aftermath of the battle with the four invading kings, God reminded Abram that he should not be afraid because he was his shield or protector. For the first time, Abram addressed God as Adonai Yahweh, Lord God, chapter 15, verse 2, and he reminded him that several years after the initial promise, he still had no child. He brought this to God, noting that presently his heir could only be Eliezer of Damascus, a servant born in his house. God replied that Abram would indeed have his own natural heir, and that his descendants would be as innumerable as the stars, verse 5. This is one of God's three ways of describing the expansion of the patriarch's progeny. Others are that they would be numerous as dust, chapter 13, verse 16, and the sand, chapter 22, verse 17. Abram's response demonstrates what set him apart as the friend of God. James chapter 2 and verse 23, we're told, he believed in the Lord and he accounted it to him for righteousness. Genesis 15, verse 6. Because he expressed faith in what God said from the time of his calling and was willing to obey him, he was counted as a righteous man. He did not receive God's gracious gift of being considered righteous by first doing good things, but by believing and having faith in the Lord. Abram then went on to live a righteous, law-abiding life. Later in Genesis, we read, Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws. Chapter 26, verse 5. These various characteristics make him a key figure in Old Testament history, often being referred to as the father of the faithful. What follows is God and Abram sealing in blood their covenant concerning descendants and land. This takes the form of a sacrificial ritual experienced by Abram in vision while in a deep sleep, chapter 15, verses 7 through 21. A blood covenant was an ancient way of signifying the solemnity of an agreement, in that each party in effect promised his life, the spilling of his own blood, if there was any breach. But here it was God alone, typified by fire and smoke, who walked between the individual pieces of the sacrificed animals, demonstrating the unconditional nature of his commitment to Abram. During the lengthy encounter, Abram learned that his offspring would become a people that would suffer slavery in a strange land, and then journey to the land of promise. This is, of course, the foretelling of the almost 400-year Egyptian captivity of the children of Israel and their release under Moses. When they eventually did arrive at the borders of Canaan, they were great in number. In fact, Moses used the same term as God did in his promise to Abram. Your fathers went down to Egypt with 70 persons, and now the Lord your God has made you as the stars of heaven in multitude. Deuteronomy chapter 10 and verse 22. Abram's wife Sarai seems to have been equally frustrated by the lack of an heir. At least 10 years had gone by since the promise. Her solution was to offer her Egyptian servant Hagar to her husband as a means of having children. Genesis 16 verse 2. This was a recognized practice of the day, attested in various ancient extra-biblical documents. While the proposed union demonstrated a lack of faith on Sarai's and Abram's part, it was not considered immoral. It did bring problems, however. When Hagar conceived by Abram, she began to despise her mistress. She could do what her mistress could not. Sarai complained, and Abram allowed his wife to do as she pleased with her servant. Sarai opted for harsh treatment, causing the pregnant Hagar to flee into the desert, possibly in the direction of Egypt, only to be met by a protective angel of the Lord. Told by this being, who was in fact the Lord in visible form, to return and submit to Sarai, Hagar was assured that her child would become the father of a multitude, verse 10, a promise not dissimilar to that made to Abraham. The son's name would be Ishmael, meaning God hears. Though he was to become a nomadic, hostile, and very aggressive man, Ishmael would receive considerable material blessings from God through his father Abraham, verse 12, and chapter 17, verse 20. He became the progenitor of some of the Arab peoples. God met with Abraham a fifth time, but now as El Shaddai, chapter 17, verse 1. Though usually translated God Almighty, there is dispute over this term. The underlying language, whether we consider it to be Akkadian, Shadu, meaning breast, or Hebrew, Shaddad, meaning to be strong, powerful, indicates the God who sustains and supplies strength, or who is strong. Abraham was to walk before him and become blameless. This time, God confirmed the promise that Abraham would have many descendants and much land, and added that he would become a father of many, or a multitude of nations and kings, verses 4 and 6. His name would be changed to reflect this expansion. He would become Abraham, meaning father of a multitude, verse 5. As we've seen, Abraham already had a son, Ishmael, from whom would also spring nations and kings. In confirmation of this everlasting covenant, verse 7, Abraham, his servants, and any males born into his household were to be circumcised, verses 10 through 14. This included Ishmael, verse 23. The change in fleshly appearance would serve to remind them of the covenant daily. The Apostle Paul later referred to the specifics of the promise of this chapter in terms of Abraham becoming heir of the world, Genesis 17, verses 4 through 6, and Romans 4, verse 13. That's to say, in the spiritual sense of being the father of all who believe, both Jews and Gentiles, who will themselves inherit the world of the future under Christ, Romans chapter 4, verses 16 through 18, 1 Corinthians 3, verses 21b through 23. Sarai, Hebrew for my princess, also had a name change. God told her husband that she would now be known as Sarah, the princess, and that nations and kings would come from her, Genesis 17, verses 15 and 16. At this point, Abraham was thinking only of his 14-year-old natural son, Ishmael, as heir, verse 18, when God explained that Sarah would bear a son and that the child would become the heir through whom God would continue his covenant. Abraham laughed in disbelief at the thought of a 100-year-old man fathering a son with a 90-year-old woman, verse 17. Sarah also laughed when she heard it, chapter 18, verses 12 through 15. Their son would thus be named Isaac, in Hebrew, Yitzhak, laughter, or he laughs. God said that Sarah would have her son a year later. 3 months would go by until conception. This allowed time for Abraham to heal of his circumcision, and for the events that followed at Sodom and Gomorrah, and with Abimelech, the king of Gerar, Genesis 18 through 20. God's sixth appearance to Abraham happened in the heat of the day, sometime during those 3 months, as he was sitting in his tent doorway. Three men approached, and he offered them food and drink. Abraham used the title Adonai to address one of them, showing that he recognized that individual to be God. The purpose of the visit was to tell Abraham of two impending events, his wife Sarah's pregnancy and the investigation of two cities in the Jordan Valley, in one of which his nephew Lot had settled. Once again in the book of Genesis, we are face to face with the problem of evil, this time specifically in respect of Sodom and Gomorrah. Abraham and Lot were about to witness their destruction. These two cities had become synonymous with sin and sexual degradation, though two additional cities, Admah and Zeboim, were also destroyed for their wickedness. See Deuteronomy chapter 29 and verse 23. Genesis 19 reveals that part of the problem in Sodom was that the inhabitants were intent on violent homosexual abuse, verses 4 through 9. God had decided to tell Abraham what was to happen, and Abraham had the opportunity to plead with God for the potential innocents who were in the cities. He was doubtless concerned about his nephew. The way the story unfolds, we are left with little doubt that there were fewer than 10 righteous inhabitants of the cities. Genesis chapter 18, verses 22 through 33. Some sources suggest that Lot's family numbered 10, his wife, two sons, two daughters and their husbands, and two single daughters, Genesis 19, verse 12, 14, and 8. Yet it may be that only Lot was righteous among his relatives, 2 Peter 2 and verse 7. Lot's two sons-in-law, having paid no attention to his pleas that they leave the city, Genesis 19, verse 14, must have died with their wives in the fiery destruction. And in the process of God having to force Lot to flee Sodom, his wife also died. Instructed by God not to look back, symbolizing desire for life in the city, see Luke 17, verses 32 and 33, she disobeyed and died encrusted in salt. Thus only Lot and his two unmarried daughters escaped, verses 16 and 17 and 26. From his vantage point on the hills above the Dead Sea, Abraham saw the smoke of the destruction going up like the smoke of a furnace. He knew then that the cities did not have even 10 righteous people in them. But because of Abraham, God had kept Lot alive, verses 28 and 29. Lot begged God for shelter that night in the small village of Zoar. Destitute, he went from there to the mountains above the Dead Sea on the east and stayed in a cave out of fear of more destruction. There, his two daughters, now reduced to poverty and without promise of future family, conspired to get their father drunk and each have a child by him, verses 30 through 38. Living in Sodom had influenced them to the extent that they decided that incest was the answer to their concern. The children were named Moab, meaning from father, and Ben-Ammi, son of my kinsman. The Bible shows this unfortunate incident to be the origin of the peoples of Moab and Ammon, today's central and northern Jordan, who would later harass Abraham's descendants through Isaac, called the children of Israel. Lot had gone from wealth as part of Abraham's household on the highlands to destitution, having chosen to live adjacent to and later in Sodom on the plains of Jordan. Lot now fades from the story and is not mentioned again. After the destruction of the cities of the plain, Abraham moves south to Gerar. There, the local king with the title Abimelech took Sarah for a wife. Confused by Abraham's statement that Sarah was his sister, which had caused trouble before with the Pharaoh of Egypt, see Genesis chapter 12, the king was informed by God in a dream that he was as good as dead for taking another man's wife. The king protested that he was not to blame. Had not both Abraham and Sarah confirmed their sibling relationship? The king was to call for Abraham and restore his wife to him. This points up the unconditional nature of God's relationship with Abraham, though he was wrong in his behavior. God would make sure that his promised son would be born through Sarah, a birth that was now just months away. Abimelech called for Abraham and heard that Sarah was indeed his sister by a different mother, but that he had acted out of fear that he would be killed and his wife taken. The king restored Sarah to him and gave him livestock and servants and access to the land, chapter 20, verses 9 through 15. As a result, the entire household of Abimelech was released from the childlessness that had come on it because of his taking Sarah. The same God was about to resolve the same problem for Sarah herself. In keeping with his promise, within the year Abraham's wife gave birth to Isaac, and this time she laughed with happiness. Chapter 21, verse 6. The line of Abraham was now secured. His son was circumcised on the eighth day, according to the terms of sealing the covenant. As the child grew, however, so did the mockery and ridicule directed at him by Abraham's first son, Ishmael. In the New Testament, Paul refers to this hostility as persecution. Galatians 4, verse 29. Once again, Sarah complained, and against Abraham's preference, God instructed him to send Ishmael and his mother away. But he assured Abraham that Ishmael would also become a great nation, because he is your seed, though in Isaac shall your seed be called. Genesis 21, verses 12 and 13 and 18. God intervened for Ishmael and Hagar after they lost their way in the desert, providing them with drink. Her now 17 to 20-year-old son grew up to live as a hunter in the wilderness of Paran, between the Negev and the Sinai, and married a woman who, like his mother, was Egyptian, verses 20 through 21. Soon after this, Abimelech and Abraham agreed to respect each other's right to land and water resources. Chapter 21, verses 22 through 34. The king had recognized that God was with Abraham, yet he still did not entirely trust him. They found out that they both had grounds for distrust and settled their disagreements in a covenant of peace at Beersheba, which means well of the seven, referring to Abraham's gift of seven lambs at the local water source, and well of swearing, in reference to the oaths exchanged. As a result, Abraham was able to live for a long time at Beersheba. One of the more puzzling aspects of God's relationship with Abraham is his request that the man offer his heir as a sacrifice. Having waited years for the fulfillment of the promise of a son by his wife, Abraham was now asked to give up that son in homage to God. By the time God made this request, Isaac was a young man. God worded his command in the same language that he used when sending Abram out of Ur of the Chaldees. Chapter 12, verse 1. Abraham's willingness to simply obey is remarkably similar. Together, father and son set out on a three-day journey to the land of Moriah, chapter 22, verse 2, accompanied by two young men. Mount Moriah would later become Jerusalem's Mount Zion, where Solomon would build the temple. Some distance from the mountain, Abraham and Isaac went on alone, leaving the other two behind to wait for their return. Abraham had in mind that God would somehow work out the preservation of Isaac as his heir. This is clear from the statement, "The lad and I will go yonder and worship, and we will come back to you," verse 5. That Abraham thought that this would happen is a testimony to his belief that God would yet spare Isaac or could resolve his sacrificial death by resurrecting him so that he could become the heir through whom God's promise of progeny would be achieved. In the account of the father who must sacrifice his willing son to receive him back, many have seen a parallel with God the Father giving up his son, Jesus, as a willing sacrifice for humanity's collective sins to then restore him by resurrection. The New Testament book of Hebrews describes the seminal event this way. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises offered up his only begotten son, of whom it was said, "In Isaac your seed shall be called," concluding that God was able to raise him up even from the dead, from which he also received him in a figurative sense. Hebrews chapter 11, verses 17 through 19. See also Isaiah chapter 53. It was a mark of Abraham's faith in the rightness of God's purpose that he was willing to make the journey and attempt the sacrifice without question. As things transpired, God intervened at the last moment to prevent Isaac's death. "Do not lay your hand on the lad, or do anything to him. For now I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. Genesis 22 and verse 12. This was the evidence God sought and the purpose of the test. At this point, a substitute sacrificial ram was seen trapped in a thicket, and Abraham knew God had provided it, as he had earlier told Isaac he would. Verse 8. Abraham's obedient action resulted in the reconfirmation of the terms of the covenant. Blessing I will bless you, and multiplying I will multiply your descendants, as the stars of the heaven, and as the sand which is on the seashore. And your descendants shall possess the gate of their enemies. In your seed all the nations of the earth shall be blessed, because you have obeyed my voice. Verses 17 and 18. Abraham and Isaac then went back to Beersheba with the two young men who had been waiting for them. Verse 19. We read next of the death and burial of Sarah. She died in Hebron, and Abraham went there to mourn for her. He bought a burial place from the local Hittite people, making it clear that his ancestral home was no longer in Haran, the area Abraham, Sarah, and Lot had left many years earlier, but in the land of promise. Chapter 23, verses 1 through 20. In the meantime, news had come to Abraham about his brother Nahor's family, who were still living in Haran. Several children had been born to Nahor and his wife Milcah, and the family had grown large. This sets the stage for the marriage of Isaac to Nahor's granddaughter, Rebekah. Abraham, now well advanced in age, decided it was time to find a wife for Isaac among his relatives in Haran. Sending his chief servant, possibly Eliezer, the overseer of Abraham's household, named in Genesis 15 and verse 2, to visit the region, he insisted that he promised not to take Isaac on the journey and that the wife-to-be should come instead to Beersheba. If the woman refused, the servant would be free of obligation. Equally emphatic was Abraham's instruction that Isaac not be allowed to take a wife from among the Canaanites. Chapter 24, verses 1 through 7. The account of the servant's journey, God's intervention, Nahor's family's agreement, and the return of Rebekah to be Isaac's wife is told in detail, verses 10 through 66. The culmination of the successful mission is summed up in verse 67. Isaac brought her into his mother Sarah's tent, and he took Rebekah, and she became his wife, and he loved her. So Isaac was comforted after his mother's death. Following Sarah's death, Abraham went on to have six more sons by Keturah, chapter 25, verses 1 and 2. The Genesis account names her as his wife, whereas she is described as a concubine in 1 Chronicles 1 and verse 32. The sons are shown to be the progenitors of various peoples and tribes of Arabia, Sinai, and Jordan. While still alive, Abraham provided each of these sons with a separate inheritance than he gave to Isaac. Genesis chapter 25, verses 5 and 6. Like Ishmael, they were to live apart from Isaac to the east of the promised land. The patriarch died in a good old age, an old man, and full of years. Verse 8. Abraham was 175. His two eldest sons' love and concern for him is recorded. Isaac and Ishmael buried him in the same place as Sarah. It's a poignant footnote to a life of faith, family rivalries, failures, and blessings. The stage is now set for the continuation of the line through Isaac, and it came to pass, after the death of Abraham, that God blessed his son Isaac, and Isaac dwelt at Beer Lahai Roy. Verse 11.